This is Christopher with the Time Shifters Podcast. You may have heard or read a review I recently posted about Monsters Wanted, a documentary about the construction, what goes into building a rather large haunted house down in Louisville, Kentucky. I wanted to find out a little bit more, so I decided to contact a director, Brian Cunningham, and he is on the line with me right now. Brian, thanks for joining me.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You know, as I said in my review, I really enjoyed the film. It was a neat look into something that I really didn't know that much goes into it.
Well, thank you very much. That was kind of why we wanted to make the movie in the first place, was because we didn't know what went into it to start. So it was a subject that was interesting to us, and I'd never done a documentary before. And I was just like, well, if you're going to jump into something, might as well do it with something that you're really interested in. So the whole documentary, the process from beginning to end, was very much a learning experience, both from the technical aspect of things and also just learning about the subject matter. It really, the scope of the project changed a lot as we got into it.
Now, you follow mostly the Asylum Haunted Screen Park. Why did you choose them in particular? Because you do highlight several other haunted houses that are in your area. You stayed within around the Louisville area, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And there were other haunted houses. So why did you choose Asylum?
Honestly, we just fate pulled me over to Rich. I had just started dating Kaylee, who's actually a co-producer in the movie. And we've been dating for about 2 months. And then one night she just said, hey, I'm going to meet this guy. I think I'm going to stage manage a haunted house for him. So she said, do you want to come with me to meet this guy? I think she'd met him once or twice before. And I said, sure. So at 10 o'clock at night, we go to a Denny's. Rich is sitting at a booth. He's got, you know, the waiter is refilling his coffee cup as fast as he can. He's got his laptop out there. He's typing furiously, and he's set up. He's been here for 8 hours. This is his office. He's been doing haunt, you know, prep work for 8 hours at this Denny's. And, Kaylee introduced me to him, and he shook my hand. And within the first 2 minutes of meeting him, he said, hi, my name's Rich. I'm in IT right now, but I'm getting ready to quit my job this week and take my entire life savings and put it into opening a haunted house. So that was really the story started not with an interest in, you know, the haunt industry as a whole, but the first nugget was just what would possess someone to take this big of a risk to just really jump all in. And Rich was just such an interesting character. I kind of had to see how this story turned out. I figured if I was going to be hanging around to see what happened, I might as well bring a camera with me. So that was kind of the beginning of it. And then I called up Joe, my co-director, and I said, hey, you want to give up the next 6 months of your life and see what happens with these guys? And that's where we started. And from there, we kind of built the idea of, you know, let's really get into haunting and what is haunting and why do people love it so much and why are people so passionate? And we decided to kind of branch off, go to Transworld, go to the Zombie Walk, follow some other haunted houses. But really from the very start, it was Rich's story was very much the backbone. At one point we were going to make it a bunch of other stories too. And we actually shot a lot of that stuff. But in editing, it just, you know, the passion was always right there with Rich. And that was really the best window into, you know, why all these guys do what they do.
I wonder if a little bit of that, too, because I think if I took it correctly, the Screen Park was already at least two haunts and they were adding two more. Was that the case in this?
It was one haunt. It was one haunt.
Okay.
It was the Darkness Falls on Asylum was an established haunt that had been there for 3 years. And this was its fourth year, and they were taking that one haunt and adding Zombie City and Zombie Hunting and the Carnival of Lost Souls and really expanding it to a theme park.
I think that might be one of the reasons why there was so much passion and such a good story to tell there versus a lot of the other haunts, which were probably much more well-established haunts. And maybe they were just trying to tweak things here and there. But this, you are literally the ground floor of building these haunts. That's where I would think the story would be.
Oh yeah. And you know, I'm sure there are great stories with the other haunts, but a lot of it is, you know, has already happened. It's in retrospect. They're really, you know, rocking on every year doing a great job. But to see someone just take that giant leap of faith into, you know, really putting it all on the line for something that they have no idea if it's going to work was, I mean, it's about the documentary is about haunted houses, but really, as cliche as it sounds, it's really about Rich, you know, going all in on a dream.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And I mentioned that in my my review of the film is there is a part of you where that wants to say, why would anyone do that? Mm-hmm. but it's not much different. And I kind of compared it to like, what's the difference of someone, you know, chucking everything to go for any goal, mm-hmm. you know, whether it be, you know, some sports fanatic wanting to win a gold at the Olympics or something. What's the difference? It's just that was his passion.
Yeah. I had a great conversation with Rich where in the thick of all this, I walked up to him and I'm like, man, you were crazy. Like, you've got to be crazy to do something like this. And he's like, am I not talking to the guy who just quit his job to start his own production company? I'm like, okay.
Yeah, there
okay,
you go.
I guess. It's just what your passion is varies from person to person, but I think everyone's got some idea of something that they would want to go all in on. But it's a scary thing to do.
I really enjoyed watching. I mean, Rich was definitely, I mean, he was into it and he was working hard and he was trying to build this thing. And he was just pretty much just whatever it takes, whatever it takes, whatever it takes, whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. And I got a kick at watching Janelle.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of when you first see her in the documentary, she looks very beautiful. Her hair is all nice. She's talking in one of the kind of interview sessions. Mm-hmm. And then throughout, but then as the months progress, you watch her just sort of fall apart through the thing from the stress and all the exertion that goes into this. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's almost kind of sad and almost a little frightening watching her throughout the film.
Well, the great thing about Janelle is she never hid what was going on with her. It just doesn't in general. She's not that kind of person. She's an open book type of person. So if she's stressed, you're going to see on her face that she's stressed. If she's pissed off, you're going to see that she's pissed off.
right.
You know, I feel like everyone involved was probably feeling the exact same emotions she was. Some of them were just better at hiding it than her.
Dealing with it in different ways.
Yeah, it's kind of that weird catch 22 when, you know, I mean, throughout this process, obviously Rich and Janelle became friends, but, you know, had to keep that distance of trying to, you know, keep some type of distance from the project so that they, you know, I wasn't interfering with what they were doing. So that was one of the weird things, was seeing Janelle so upset and wanting to just go give her a big hug, and feeling terrible, but at the same time, secretly inside going, yes, this is going to look awesome. It's going to be great in the movie. So, you know, that's kind of the fine line I think you walk when you're trying to find drama to tell a good story, but you also really do care about the people you're shooting. So
probably that little devil on your shoulders also kind of like, oh, maybe I should go to Rich and tell him he should maybe buy that one other thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to get Janelle's reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my favorite shot of her is just leaving. I don't remember if they're leaving like probably like one of the hardware stores or something, and she's just writing the check almost in a zombie like fashion. It's just this day's look. Like I just don't believe what's going on.
Yeah, that I mean, and then I enjoyed the shot where she's sitting on the pallet at, I think it's Home Depot, and she's just sitting there and Ritz just kind of wheels it away and her legs flop out. And it's just total, like she's just resigned herself to whatever's going to happen.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's a great element of it's an element of the story I didn't expect at all. When I first met Rich and Janelle, it seemed like this was very much Rich's baby and Janelle was helping. And as the story developed, it became really clear to me that it was almost opposite, that this was very much Janelle's baby. Rich was Rich was the mouthpiece. Rich was, you know, the front man for it. But as far as, you know, just the passion and dream of haunting, I think Janelle's got the haunting bug more than anyone else in the documentary. So that was a real surprise. She became a much bigger part of the story than I expected when I first met her.
You mentioned earlier about that there's a lot of reasons why people do these things, and that was one of the things you wanted to explore. And I think with Rich Janelle, it was just they were trying to just sort of recreate you know, fun times they've had in other haunted houses, and they just wanted to do it themselves. But you, we meet a lot of the people that end up staffing the haunted house and doing the actual haunting. And then, of course, Chainsaw Pete, there's one type of person that really enjoys his getting out some demons, I think, when he once a year.
Yeah, I don't know that he gets out demons. I think he holds on to those demons. I think he's looking for more demons to put inside himself to unleash on the public. Pete is an incredibly interesting guy because and I hope the documentary shows this a little bit. He's like the monster under the bed and your grandpa all at the same time. I mean, he's the sweetest guy. If anyone's hurt or needs help, he's the first one there. He was out at the haunt, you know, when crunch time came, he was out, you know, bear hugging barrels and moving, you know, 150-pound barrels by himself just to try and get things to work, you know. He's no ego, no, you know, he's just there to help. And then when it comes time for him to pull out his chainsaw, there's, you know, everyone's fair game. And he just wants to scare the hell out of anyone he can. So,
yeah, I think he even mentions that a lot of it is just that control that you have that he's able to exercise over people when he's wielding this chainsaw at them. And, you know, when I get him down, I don't let him up.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's, I mean, that control aspect, I think, is something that is kind of a thread for a lot of those actors is, you know, a lot of them are struggling with things. You know, they come in at a moment in their life where they're in transition or they're struggling with, you know, challenges and the haunt, you know, for 12 days, they can go out in the woods and have complete control over at least one situation and really affect people. And I think that's a huge draw. That's a huge reason that these guys go and work for peanuts, you know, for 10 hours until 3 a.m. every October.
A lot of others, it gave me the idea that, you know, they can't make it to Hollywood to try to be an actor or an actress and, you know, being able to go to a haunt and play a part.
Yep. Yeah, that's especially true in Zombie City, which is way more theatrical than the other haunt was Darkness Falls, which is all about scaring you. But Zombie City, there's like a full storyline that you follow as you go through, which was by design, you know, have two completely different types of haunts. So those guys, you know, it's scripted lines. There's some really talented actors in there that are just not in a position to be able to do any, you know, big movie or stage work. So this is an outlet for them to kind of let their talent shine too.
The one that really impressed me, I almost hope some casting director or producer sees the one kid that during the audition sat there. In the audition, he had very long kind of curly blonde hair. And he started talking about, oh, I like to slice into people to see what's inside. Yep. And he's just the creepiest kid.
Yep, that is Riker.
Riker?
Yeah, which is – actually, I don't even know Riker's last name. He's just Riker. Everyone knows him as Riker. But no, Riker is a fantastic actor and can, you know, can switch that character on and off, which is another fun thing is when you go through the haunted houses and you see – like I would follow behind groups. So you see the actor do their scene and they end their scene and the group moves on. And then it's like immediate switch off and, you know, go smoke a cigarette. I mean, it's on and off literally 250 times a night, more than that. You know, as the groups come through, you have maybe 2 minutes between groups and then you've got to do the same scene again. So, I mean, it can be a very grueling process for actors, especially the ones who have scripted scenes and, you know, have to play the same scene, you know, 300, 400 times a night.
This was, you know, a good portion of 6 months of your life, as you said. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you, and it was your first documentary. Mm-hmm. Is a documentary something you think you'll take on again?
You know, I don't know that I'll ever seek out a documentary. Like, I'm not the kind of filmmaker to go, oh, this, I need to explore this subject, you know, this abstract subject. I'm going to go and, you know, book hotel rooms and fly around the world and, you know, figure out that. If I do another one, it's going to be something pretty intimate like this is, and it's going to be because I fell into it again. I had no aspirations to make a documentary when we started. It was just, I'd actually just finished, our first movie, Overtime, was just coming out. And that's, you know, very much schlocky genre, you know, hitmen, aliens, birthday party cake, you know, all that weird, you know, crazy B genre movie.
I'll have to check that one
out. Yeah, it's a little different. But we were just finishing that up and I was ready to take a break. And then I meet Rich and it's like, well, it was just one of those situations where it's not that I really wanted to do it or, you know, I felt compelled to follow it. You know what I mean? It wasn't something I set out, hey, I want to make a documentary next. What's a good subject? It was more, damn it, I'm going to have to do this. I don't really want to right now. I'm really tired. I don't want to jump back into something, but this is just too cool to say no to. So if I do another documentary, I think it's going to have to be a very similar situation to that.
Well, hopefully if you do, it will be something that you find just as impassioned about as you did this one. I really enjoyed it. I hope other people check it out. It is available on DVD and video on demand. Is there particular places people can go to find the film?
Well, it's on iTunes. It's on Google Play. It's on DVD, as you said. All those links can be found at our website, which is monsterswanted.com. And you'll see a big banner right across the top that'll take you to your format of choice. So check it out, rent it, buy it, and let me know your thoughts when you finish. There's a contact button, and we're also on Facebook. It's facebook.com/monsterswanted. Let me know what you think of the movie.
Okay, absolutely. Please do that. All those links will be down in the show notes of this interview. So once again, Brian, thank you very much for joining me. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
There are several ways that you can join the discussion. Sign up in our forum at www.jonja.net. Send us an email to podcast@jonja.net. Or you can call our voicemail at 724-JONJA-51. That's 724-566-5251. You can also join our Facebook page at facebook.com/jonjanet. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing from you.